We can choose what we eat, what we wear, where we live, what we study, where we work, who we relate to. We have a lot of choice. In fact, we can even choose what kind of Jesus we want. There's a lot of Jesuses out there. There's Counselor Jesus and Healer Jesus and Teacher Jesus and Community Service Jesus and Good Works Jesus and Inner Peace Jesus. You name it, there'll be a Jesus for it. And that's a good thing. One thing with choice, though. We need to know what each model does. We need to know what to expect, or else how can we make a choice? This one comes with batteries included. That one's got a longer warranty. And this one over here comes with a carry bag. Okay, so I can make my choice now. I know what to expect. My name's Kamal, by the way. I'm a student minister here. It's a pleasure to be with you. Tonight, we're going to get into this Bible passage. And it's an excellent passage because it tells us what to expect from Jesus. We're going to see a couple of different models of Jesus and what to expect from each one, the features of each. And that will help us in making our choice. What kind of Jesus do we want? Now, it's a complex passage. We can't possibly explore everything in this passage tonight, and I'd love to chat some more with you over coffee afterwards if you like. But at the center of this passage is Jesus talking to a crowd and telling them what to expect. So let's go back in time. Let's join that crowd and hear what Jesus has to say. So the first thing we see is Jesus getting two visitors. We hear them talking to Jesus. They're from John the Baptist. Wow, yeah, we know about John the Baptist. He was a mighty preacher before Jesus turned up. What's that they're saying to Jesus? Apparently John's heard about Jesus' miracles and healings. Yeah, of course John's heard. I mean, who hasn't heard about Jesus' miracles and the healings? It's been amazing. Jesus healed that centurion's servant. Remember that? He didn't even have to be with him. He wasn't in the same room, wasn't anywhere near him. He just said the word, and the servant was healed. Amazing. But that was nothing. Just after that, he brought that dead boy back to life. Just strolls up to the coffin and says a couple of words, and the young boy gets up as if he's waking up from a nice, pleasant little nap. Mind-blowing, that was. Hey, they're about to give Jesus the message from John the Baptist. Let's hear what they have to say. Sentence 19, the second half. Are you the one who was to come, or should we expect someone else? Okay, this is not good. John is having doubts about Jesus. John was disappointed. Jesus didn't fit his expectations. He thought he got the wrong model, a dud product. John was expecting someone who would clean up the mess that this world had got into. John expected Jesus the judge, Jesus the cleaner-upper. He wasn't happy with a gentle, loving Jesus. Well, in that case, we're glad John was disappointed. I mean, who wants a fire and brimstone Jesus anyway? Hey, John, check the sales figures. That model's been out of fashion for years. If you want your rotten judgment, John, you can have your rotten judgment. I mean, you know? But wait a minute. This cleaning up was not theoretical for John. Anyone know why John had to send messengers? Why couldn't he come himself? It's a real question. Anyone know why? He was in prison. Yeah, that's right. John was in jail. In jail because he told King Herod, the king of Israel at the time, because he told King Herod that he shouldn't have married his sister-in-law. And John was right. Herod shouldn't have married his sister-in-law. It was against the Jewish law of the time. But Herod was not interested in keeping the law. He just wanted to shut John up. So he tossed John in jail. And what's Jesus done about it? Nothing! He hasn't helped John. He hasn't rebuked Herod. He hasn't led a revolt against Herod and the Roman overlords whom he's really working for. He even healed a Roman centurion's servant, for crying out loud. No wonder John's disappointed. No wonder he's doubting. He's probably feeling totally betrayed. Maybe we shouldn't be too hard on John. He's suffering injustice. And he wants justice. We can't blame him for that, can we? And we do it ourselves. We've seen the pain in the world. Many of us have been victims of it ourselves. It makes us cry out for justice. It makes us go on protest marches. It makes us write petitions. Like when the government proposed those changes to industrial relations law, it's been a big response. Marches, strikes, protests, petitions. People think it's unjust and they're making a noise about it. But what do we do when the authorities are the ones doing the injustice? What would we do if we were Christians in Darfur, in southern Sudan, where the Muslim-dominated government has been doing a civil war, persecuting the Christians for decades? They're suffering. Suffering under the authorities. Who's left to cry out to? God is the last refuge for those who cry out for justice. John the Baptist, he's suffering unjustly under the authority, under the king. And Jesus hasn't done anything about it. Come on, Jesus, I thought you were God's messenger. I thought you were the king, the Christ, the Messiah. Are you the real thing? Are you the genuine article? Or do we have to wait for someone else? It's a good question, isn't it? Well, how's Jesus going to respond? Let's look at sentences 21 to 23. Back in Luke 7, 21 to 23. At that very time, Jesus cured many who had diseases, sicknesses, and evil spirits, and gave sight to many who were blind. So he replied to the messengers, "Go back and report to John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is preached to the poor. Blessed is the man who does not fall away on account of me." This is how Jesus responds. "Look, guys, let me show you something." And pow, right there, right in front of John's messengers, Jesus does even more healings, even more miracles. But he adds one thing. Did you notice the end of verse 22? "The good news is preached to the poor." That's interesting. Wonder what he means by that. But look, something's changed. John's messengers are leaving, and for the first time, Jesus turns and addresses us. Let's read sentences 24 to 28. After John's messengers left, Jesus began to speak to the crowd about John. "What did you go out into the desert to see? A reed swayed by the wind? If not, what did you go out to see? A man dressed in fine clothes? Now, those who wear expensive clothes and indulge in luxury are in palaces. But what did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, I tell you, and more than a prophet. This is the one about whom it is written, 'I will send my messenger ahead of you who will prepare your way before you.' I tell you, among those born of women, there is no one greater than John. Yet the one who is least in the kingdom of God is greater than he." We knew what to expect with John. A pliable man? No way. He told the king where to get off. A rich man? You know, he lived in the wilderness. That comment about those who wear fine clothing live in palaces, I think that's a payout on King Herod, who's keeping John under lock and key. No, John was a prophet. We knew what to expect from him. He was a prophet. Well, no. Hang on. He was, what did Jesus just say? He's more than a prophet. He's the one who prepares the way. In fact, he's the greatest one who has ever lived. Whoa, talk about a ring endorsement. We thought we knew about John, but we didn't. He's an even greater man than we expected. Jesus is not upset with John for doubting him. He's just paid him the biggest compliment possible. But hang on. What did he say just at the end of sentence 28? What did he say in sentence 28? Yet the one who is least in the kingdom of God is greater than he. But hang on. If John the Baptist is the greatest one who's ever lived, then how could anyone be greater than him? What does Jesus mean here? Drama continues. But listen, Jesus is saying something to us again. Sentences 31 to 34. To what then can I compare the people of this generation? What are they like? They are like children sitting in the marketplace and calling out to each other. We played the flute for you and you did not dance. We sang a dirge and you did not cry. For John the Baptist came neither eating bread nor drinking wine, and you say he has a demon. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and you say, here is a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. But wisdom is proved right by all her children. And with that, Jesus turns and walks away. Well, the plot thickens. John the Baptist and Jesus were two very different people. John was a reformer. He talked about judgment and cleansing. Jesus was a gentleman. He talked about forgiveness and healing and restoration. But they both claimed to be sent by God. And they both claimed to be speaking the fundamentally same message. But some people found a reason to reject them both. It's as if they couldn't be satisfied with anything. John the Baptist, old-fashioned hellfire preachers, I'm not listening to him. Jesus, he's just a party animal. Have you seen the lowlife he hangs out with? Why should I listen to him? Which makes us think, do we really want to respond? Do we really want to respond to the product we're given? Or are we actually just looking for a reason to find fault with it? But hang on, Jesus, what do you want from us? What should we really expect? Can't you tell us straight, Jesus? Looks like we got more questions than answers so far. Here's a summary of the questions I could think of. What did Jesus mean that the good news is preached to the poor? Anyway, and what response does Jesus want anyway? And thirdly, how could anyone be greater than John the Baptist? Well, there's one part of the passage that we have not looked at yet. And it's the bit that makes sense of everything else. Because it's the one bit where the author, Luke, gives us an explanation. Most of the time in this passage, he's behind the camera, just showing us the action. But just in this one bit, he jumps in front of the camera and says, look, here's what's going on. And then he gets out of the way again. And that bit is sentences 29 and 30. Let's read them. Sentences 29 and 30. All the people, even the tax collectors, when they heard Jesus' words, acknowledged that God's way was right, because they had been baptized by John. But the Pharisees and experts in the law rejected God's purposes for themselves because they had not been baptized by John. It's all got to do with John the Baptist. There, see? Easy, clear. I can sit down now, can't I? Yeah. John the Baptist, that judgment guy, what's he got to do with it? Well, those who accepted John accepted Jesus. Those who rejected John rejected Jesus. See, John came to prepare the way for Jesus. He created a group of people who knew that they needed to be made right with God. They heard John's warning about the coming judgment, and they took it seriously. But they also knew that they were not acceptable to God. So they were desperately looking for someone, something, some way to be made right with God. So when Jesus came, when Jesus reached out to them in forgiveness, they were ready. Oh boy, were they ready. They grabbed Jesus with both hands, held on to him for dear life, or maybe should we say for eternal life. But those who didn't think they needed to be forgiven, they rejected Jesus. They rejected John and they rejected Jesus. The Pharisees and the experts in the law, the good ones, the upright ones, the moral ones, they didn't think they needed to be forgiven. They were good enough already. This is why Jesus came bringing good news to the poor. Jesus helped a lot of people who are literally poor, like the widow who was burying her only son. She was destitute. She had no one. She was poor, real poor. But not everyone whom Jesus helped was literally poor. Tax collectors, they weren't poor. They'd be some of the richest people in the country of Israel at the time. And the centurion whose servant Jesus healed, he wasn't poor. Centurions were aristocracy, the comfortable upper middle class of Roman society. He wasn't literally poor, but they all knew that they were helpless. They all knew that their money and power was nothing. Last week, nothing in the face of death. And because of that, they cast themselves helplessly on Jesus. Remember the centurion? Just say the word and my servant will be healed. The centurion had complete confidence in Jesus. Just give the command and it'll happen. This is the kind of response that Jesus wants from us. He wants us to trust him. Not blind faith, no, not a leap in the dark. He wants us to be reasonably, rationally, clear-mindedly persuaded. Persuaded that he will not let us down. John was right. Jesus did come to clean up the mess. But John thought the bad bits would come before the good. To clean up the mess, you've got to get rid of the dirt. To cure gangrene, curing gangrene involves amputating limbs. So John thought that the judgment came first. And then the benefits. But it's actually the other way around. With Jesus, gangrene can be healed, restored. It doesn't have to be cut off. With Jesus, the benefits come first. After that comes the judgment. We're standing in between those times. We've got the benefits now. We can be forgiven now. We can be right with God now. This is why we can be greater than John the Baptist. We have a clearer insight into what Jesus did because we stand on this side of the cross. The cross brings all of the benefits of God. The cross was God's great cleanup. Because of the cross we can be forgiven. Because of the cross we can trust Jesus. And all of this without judgment and condemnation. At least, not yet. We stand between the cross and the cleanup day. We can point to the cross and tell people what Jesus achieved in his death and resurrection. And that is what makes us greater than even John the Baptist. So here's the answers to those questions we had earlier. The poor are those who know they need to be put right with God. The correct response to Jesus is to trust him. And we can be greater than John because we can point to the cross. So friends, we got to ask ourselves, what brand of Jesus do we have? The real Jesus works. He won't let us down. But only if we have the right one. The fakes don't work. There used to be an ad some time back for blockout shutters. One house had shutters that looked like blockout shutters, but they were fakes and they could be pulled off the rails. But the other house had real shutters and you couldn't pull them off the rails. The real ones worked. The fake ones didn't. The real Jesus works. He blocks out the blazing rays of the judgment of God because he's absorbed it for us in the cross. But the fake Jesus doesn't work. The fake Jesuses will let us down when it really matters. Check the Jesus you have, friends. Check the product specifications. Do you have the real Jesus? Or is it a dud? Maybe we've been sold a healer Jesus or a wealth and prosperity Jesus. That one won't work. Jesus never promised complete health and success in this life. John the Baptist, he didn't get out of jail. He got executed. Complete healing and power and success is in the next life, not this one. Maybe you've been sold a good works Jesus, that you've got to do good things and make Jesus happy. No, Jesus came to hang out with low life. The whole point that he came was that we can't do good works. Or maybe we haven't made our purchase yet. We haven't committed to Jesus yet. We're still inspecting the product. That's great. We need to think, are we willing to trust Jesus? Are we willing to join the ranks of the poor? That is, have we recognized our helplessness before God? Are we persuaded that Jesus can do what he claims to do? If we're not persuaded, that's fine. Keep coming along to church. Keep reading the Bible. Keep testing the product out. It's okay to test Jesus out. Ask questions. Go right ahead. But if we are committed, hang in there. Sometimes it feels like Jesus doesn't work, like he's broken or run out of batteries or something. Yeah, I know that feeling. It's okay to doubt, by the way. Did you notice John doubted and Jesus dealt gently with him? He didn't slam the guy. He dealt with him really gently, more than gently. He gave him a huge compliment. It's okay to have doubts. The real Jesus really works. Keep looking back to the cross. He will not let us down when it really matters. Or even better, if we're greater than John the Baptist, well then let's get on with pointing to Jesus better than John the Baptist could. Come along on mission. Learn how to tell people about Jesus. Learn how to help people understand Jesus better. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to be even greater than John the Baptist. Talk to Kim, talk to Matt, sign up for mission. Okay, I've been raving on for long enough. Let me wrap up. We are the options generation. We have lots of choice, even choice over Jesus. But be careful. We have to be careful how we exercise that choice. The real Jesus works. Fake ones don't. The real Jesus won't let us down when it really matters on Judgment Day. Have you got the real Jesus?